The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
My guest today is a return guest. He's not here often enough, but that's my fault, not his. Kevin DeSanto of Kips DeSanto. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me. Always great to be a part of this.
This is, it's always fun when you're here. I'm not going to tell people what you do. You tell people what you do.
So Kips DeSanto is an investment bank based in Tysons Corner. We are focused on advising middle market, aerospace, defense, and government companies on mergers and acquisitions, private capital raising, and general strategic planning. And have been around for almost 10 years and very, very active in the community and in the industry, and look forward to sharing our thoughts on what we're seeing in the market.
Yeah, I noticed that you guys started putting out some reports on like the top deals of the year and stuff, which is what precipitated this. So I like to see the that content sharing. I mean, you guys have a different type of content than a lot of companies. You monitor the action in the market very differently, and that's what we're going to cover today. So let's do a little background here. Over the last 3 or 4 years, how has the M&A side of this market been shaping up?
It's been an interesting one, to say the least, and I imagine a lot of folks in the audience will appreciate some of the positive and negative events that have been driving the market. You know, I also think that there's just been a change in the way that people think about this market as a result of some of the macro and micro trends that we're seeing. But it has been interesting. And when you look at the actual volume of transaction activity that's occurred in the defense and government contracting space, the last 3 years have been relatively modest. We've had an average of about 73 transactions per year from 2013 through 2015. And that's a significant decrease from what we saw in the 3 years that preceded that. 2010 through 2012 were closer to 100 transactions a year. That change has been felt in many different ways, and ultimately that transaction volume has yielded a lot of different strategies and a lot of different opportunities for companies in this marketplace. What we've really seen, and what's at the heart of this matter, is that there's been a shift in the marketplace overall. You know, one of the things that we were talking about before we got online here was that this is a market where the competition has really, really amped up over the last couple of years. You know, this has been driven by things like protests. It's been driven by budget changes and or challenges. It's been driven by the political landscape. In general, the transition of the business model in the government contracting space from a pure services play to more of a mix of services and technology. These are some of the things that have caused people to take a step back and reassess their strategy. Where am I growing my business? How am I going to grow my business? Which customers are going to see funding over the longer term? Which areas of technology are going to be the ones that are most lucrative over the course of the next 5 to 10 years. Some of those big questions that we've been hearing and seeing out of leadership, the C-suite, the boards of the larger companies in the industry, have ultimately challenged this marketplace to start to think about things differently. Over the course of the last few years, we've seen less transaction volume because of some of the challenges in the business. They've created businesses that are, in general, less attractive to be acquired right now. And they've also challenged some of the buyers to go through their own internal strategies of changing the way that they think, or cost-cutting before buying, doing things that are going to ultimately stave off competition, or, in a lot of cases, divest and move away from certain markets that are ultimately not as attractive as they once were, before they get back to the normal course acquisition activity that has been at the heart and soul of this industry for decades.
And this is exactly why I asked you on, because you know this stuff.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, you know,
we have to prove that out now.
Every time we talk, you know, my brain starts going in multiple directions. But you know, you referenced the report that I mentioned before we went on air, the GAO report talking about the rise in protests over the last year, and part of the GAO report indicated that was because in real dollars we've had a decrease in spending over the last maybe 5 years or so of about 25% when it's inflation adjusted. Now that not only drives protests, but it does drive the M&A side. I mean, we see companies scouring the GWAC winners, the CIO SP3 contracts, the CIOCS contracts, Soup, Alliant, you know, companies scouring these to see if there's an angle where they can get on, you know, buy a smaller firm that has a piece of this.
Or just buy the contract vehicle. And we've seen a number of those transactions over the course of the last couple of years. And they're directly tied into those trends that GAO report characterizes. More competition, a tighter environment when it comes to ultimate spending, lack of channel to get to the customer, right? Some of the consolidation that we've seen in the GWACs and the IDIQs and the schedules over the course of these last 5 to 10 years have really boxed folks out of the market. And we've seen that CIOSP3 vehicle or that Alliant vehicle become a critical path to dollars, a path to work. And so if you're not on it, you need to find a way on there, especially if you're looking to make transitions from set-aside contracting into full and open marketplaces. You may not have been in a position to bid 4 or 5 years ago on a full and open basis, but you can afford to pay and buy a spot today. And so we've seen a lot of that activity as folks try to gain access to either customers or the schedule or the vehicle that can provide the funding or help a customer move the funding to the specific work or opportunity that they're trying to target. That acquisition activity is unique in this marketplace, in large part because most of the transactions that we see are stock purchases. Oftentimes, what we're seeing now are companies purchasing the assets of another business, the specific contract vehicle and the task orders associated with that, and going through a process of bringing that just the contract vehicle and those task orders on board. There was an announcement recently about Vistronics doing that with Alliant. We saw Tribalco do that at the tail end of last year with Alliant as well. You know, and you mentioned this earlier. You're sort of hearing and seeing a lot of activity around things like CIOSP3. So it'll be interesting to watch how that goes. But that is definitely a direct reaction to a more competitive environment and ultimately a more challenging ability for folks to gain access.
Let me add one more thing to that.
Because I think we'll see some of this, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the course of the next 5 years, because you've got some pretty interesting vehicles that are coming to play here over the course of that period of time. You've got the next gen vehicle at VA, the T4 next gen. You've got CMS up in Baltimore putting out a new kind of broad contract vehicle called Spark. We're going to see a number of interesting opportunities for folks to be bidding today, and then what's the reaction going to be if they don't win in those situations, and you've got these long-term contract positions that might box them out of a market. I think it forces people to think differently about their business and how they might allocate their investment dollars.
And the CMS one is illustrative of one of the growing areas, that's health IT. So if you're not on one of the NITAC vehicles, which specialize in health IT, or one of the CMS vehicles or a DHA vehicle, you could be, to use another acronym, SOL.
Exactly. Yeah, and I bet if you flew to Las Vegas today, you'd find a good chunk of D.C. out there, because there's a huge healthcare conference called HIMSS that's taking place this week, and that is the center of the universe for a lot of these folks to get together and figure out how they're going to continue to play this market. Not only just how you're going to service it in terms of the federal contracting, but how you're going to bring commercial technologies and practices into this marketplace as well. Health IT certainly is going to be a huge, huge market over the coming years for a lot of companies in this industry.
Okay. The other question I wanted to ask you related to this is when a company's picking up the assets, particularly the contractual assets of a winner of one of the GWAC positions. What is your role as an investment banker in facilitating that process, making sure that that acquisition goes through? Because if it's a much larger company buying a smaller company's position, can you still make that deal happen?
It depends, which is a typical investment banker answer. The fundamental role that we can play is to help identify available vehicle positions. And then the second piece is to help negotiate a transaction that's going to make sense for both the buyer and seller, something that's going to balance the risk and afford the companies the opportunity to successfully transition the asset. The ultimate role and the ultimate piece of the puzzle here is the companies and their lawyers working closely with their customers to make sure that any transition is possible based on the contract structure and language, and then secondarily that the actual process yields a successful outcome. And that's one of the things that we always talk to companies about when they're going to look to buy assets in this marketplace, is to make sure that they're working closely with the customer. That's going to really be a fundamental part of the success story, is whether or not it's whether or not the customer's comfortable with it, and then the buying entity can do a better job than the selling entity has been doing as they look forward on that.
Kevin DeSanto of Kips DeSanto. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest is Kevin DeSanto of Kips DeSanto. You can find Kips DeSanto at KIPPSDESANTO, KipsDeSanto.com. Boy, there's a couple of different ways to slice and dice the M&A market, and you have the huge services deals, but from my perspective, some of the most interesting deals, particularly one I wrote about extensively last year, was the AeroImex deal. So this is a channel play. This is a product play. What's your take here?
I thought it was an interesting transaction as well, and when we look back over 2014 and 15, including the DLT sale from TPZ to Milstein, and including the Microtech divestiture of some assets to Unicom, you really had folks in that traditional reseller or distributor space, coming into transactions that we hadn't seen for a long time in this marketplace. You have to go back to the early 2000s and back into the 90s to find the last generation of those types of deals. And so it was interesting to watch that. My own belief is that we're trying to find ways to get closer to the technology, and that those companies represent a very interesting relationship and a very interesting opportunity, particularly if you think about it from a services or typical labor contracting environment. How do you develop that stronger relationship? How do you become more technologically savvy? A lot of those relationships yield a ton of information, a ton of value, and a ton of opportunity to really develop a presence within a technology vertical that seemingly is the future with respect to how the government's going to buy and or what they're going to target in terms of the next generation of systems and networks and ERP systems and the like. And so we're watching that carefully. And, if the accounting was better and allowed for higher margin recognition, I think you'd see a lot more folks playing in there. Despite the lower margins, I think we're still going to find that there's an interesting angle on those types of businesses in the future.
Okay. Now, from my perspective, one of the things that I touched on when I wrote about this, and I certainly got a lot of phone calls about this from, let's just call them the distributors not involved in the transactions, was the opportunity for them to pursue more logical deals. Now, obviously, more logical deals would imply either DLT or Carahsoft.
So I can't comment on those two specifically, but I do think in terms of the market, if you've developed a business that is based on full and open contracts and is tied to the technologies that are viewed as next generation, I think that there may be a window there. If you're in the kind of legacy technology areas, dealing with things like mainframes at this point in time, or if you're in other areas that aren't necessarily growth opportunities, it may be tougher. Or if you're winning these contract awards on a set-aside basis, it's probably tougher. But in light of full and open, and in light of some of the rapid technology advancement that we've seen, I can see opportunities for those businesses in that quote-unquote more logical deal.
Okay. So, you know, I don't anticipate either of those companies selling Carahsoft because I don't think Mr. Abbott is interested in selling to anybody. I don't think he's interested in reporting to anybody. And DLT, because, you know, as you mentioned, the Milstein deal really just happened.
Right. And what we've ultimately seen in this market is a fundamental interest in larger transactions over the course of the last couple of years. And I think that that's part of what folks are looking at. How can you generate a top line that's moving north quickly? And in a lot of cases, they want to do that on a more sizable transaction. And that's really, I think, a large part of what's drawn some of these businesses to the market over the course of the last couple of years is that opportunity to be the large bite for some of these larger companies that are ultimately looking to move the needle through their acquisition programs.
Okay. You know, it kind of begs the question, too, because, you know, Carahsoft, DLT, and Immix really defined a new role for supervars in the market. They were, in effect, you know, value-added distributors in the market, exclusively in the government arena. CDW's not that different from them size-wise, but the other thing that differentiates that group of companies is the bandwidth of contractual vehicles that each of them has. I mean, you know, if you look at them, each of them has between 15 and 25 different contracts, a lot of GWACs, a lot of cooperative state and local agreements, a lot of agency-specific MACs. So, I mean, you know, contract-wise alone, they're worth their weight in whatever.
And I think it'll be interesting to watch them because they should ultimately also be looking to acquire other businesses. You know, in that same category of companies is WWT out of St. Louis, and they bought a business earlier in 2015 called Asynchrony, and have rebranded that as Asynchrony Labs. And that is a pure development shop and a very high-end organization at that. And for them to sort of move into that business and build a pointy end of the spear in terms of their customer access and or the types of work that they're doing to support their customers, ultimately, you know, the ability to move upstream higher margin businesses has always been one of the primary interests of the resellers and the distributors. And, you know, there's been a few success stories along the way, and there have been some challenges along the way. But I think ultimately those companies looking out as acquirers of business is going to be an interesting trend to watch in the future.
Yeah, and WWT's always been an interesting play to me because they've been a top performer on the GWACs where they play, and they stay as much as possible off the radar. So they're very much on the radar of the buying community and probably the channel community, but in the, you know, broader government sense, they don't have the and they probably don't want the media play that a lot of other companies get.
Not too dissimilar from a lot of other companies in this industry that would prefer to really do their great work behind the scenes. You know, we see that in a lot of different subsectors and industry niches around here because ultimately the job that they do and the role that they play is an extremely important one, but the publicity isn't necessarily a value add to the overall program.
Correct. And just, you know, one of the cool nuances here. So let's talk about a few of the deals before our next break that really got your attention, say, over the last year or so. So pick one or two for this segment, and we'll do some more next.
Well, I think that you have to start with a deal like CSC Gov and SRA. Essentially kind of going through a divestiture of CSC Gov and merger with SRA all overnight right around Thanksgiving of 2015 really creates an incredible story and a $5.5 billion revenue public company and a new player in the market. You know, that transaction, just given the sheer size and magnitude of it, certainly was one that created a lot of interest interest in the market, and hopefully is a sign of things to come. What we've been hearing and seeing out of a lot of folks is a desire to be more creative and a desire to be more competitive. And when you create an organization of that size and scale, it's hard to argue that that's not creative and creating a more efficient and effective competitor. And so that deal, certainly was one of the leaders in our mind in terms of looking at the deals that occurred in 2015. And there were numerous others behind that that looked and felt the same. You had a smaller version of that in two private equity-owned businesses, Salient and CRGT, merging together. Very similar mindset, just at a smaller scale.
Brad's a bright guy.
Yeah, and I think we're going to continue to see that type of activity here over the course of 2016, where folks are trying to figure out ways to bring skill sets together, to bring cost bases together, to bring vehicles together in order to attack the market in a way that is much more efficient and or competitive than what they can do independently. And if you take a step back and think about it from a shareholder vantage point, you're really looking for ways to increase your returns over the next 3 to 5 years. And if that means that you have to merge and become either a smaller control shareholder or a minority shareholder in that type of situation to generate those returns, we're seeing a receptivity to that that we wouldn't have seen in prior years. And some of that is because there have been a lot of challenges inside of businesses over the course of the last 3 to 5 years. But some of it's because when you look forward, you really do have to figure out how to align the right resources with the right vehicles or the right customer beachheads in order to find ways to be more competitive. And so we're seeing that from these larger companies. And we know that those types of conversations have been happening in boardrooms around the industry for the last couple of years. 2015 was a great example of that actually coming to fruition. We mentioned earlier that there were about 75 transactions in 2015. Almost a quarter of those were companies that were larger than either $100 million revenue businesses or $100 million transactions. That's a greater proportion than what we typically see in this industry, and it is, a direct result of those competitive desires and repositioning, and even ties back to some of the things that we were talking about earlier with respect to the competitive environment and some of the challenges in the budget and the protests and other things that are a part of the industry today.
Okay. I want to make one comment on the SRA-CSE thing, and that was the interesting way in which they blended the brand value. The new name CSRA is, it takes kind of the best of both. So it still resonates, unlike some of the other companies when they merge, they create a new name, or when a company buys a very well-established brand, like when Unicom bought GTSI, GTSI went away. And, I still get confused when people mention Unicom because I'm just so used to hearing GTSI.
Well, you're an industry vet, so you love acronyms, there's no doubt.
Kevin DeSanto, managing partner of Kips DeSanto. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Kevin DeSanto, managing partner of Kips DeSanto. You can find them at KIPPS DeSanto, DeSanto.com. Kevin, keep rolling on some of these deals because there was some pretty neat ones.
As we were talking about earlier, there have been more large transactions in 2015 and even gone back into 2014 than what we've typically seen in this sector. And that's, again, something that we're kind of keeping our eyes on because it affects who the buyers are in this universe. And what we were witnessing over the last couple of years was a lot of uncertainty in larger companies as to whether they were a buyer, a seller, looking for outside capital divesting pieces of their business. You oftentimes refer to this as sort of a musical chairs type of environment. And we really saw the fruition of a lot of that over the course of 2015, particularly in the last half of the year. If we were to have this conversation back in September and October, you would have said, well, it's been interesting because CACI hasn't acquired too many companies in the last couple of years, despite being very active historically. And then, lo and behold, the announcement of their acquisition of the L3 NSS business, which is obviously a game changer for CACI and continues to build that business through acquisition, which has been a big part of their legacy. We've continued to see a lot of private equity interest in the sector. In 2015, we saw the acquisition of Novetta, which was an Arlington Capital portfolio company, being acquired by Carlyle. We saw Alion being acquired by Veritas. You saw Aegis, a security business, being acquired by a private equity-backed Garda World. And then even in the sort of public markets, we saw an interesting deal with STG being acquired by a SPAC, or a special purpose acquisition vehicle, that ultimately brought STG to be a public company through that type of transaction. So we've seen these big strategic transactions, and we've also seen the private equity community continue to be active buyers in this space. And we think that both of those trends are going to continue here over the course of the next couple of years, in large part because these are businesses that are very, very healthy in terms of the balance sheet and the ability to borrow from the bank to fuel transaction price and or proceeds, as well as the low capital nature of these over time provides for a lot of financing capacity and the ability to continue to do acquisitions even after that initial transaction, which is a great way for them to juice up their equity rates of return as they look forward and pay down that debt.
Okay. So you have several others on this list that you sent to me, and I'm not familiar with a number of the purchasers, Lindsay Goldberg, Abry, PAE. Maybe I should be, but I'm not.
So, well, you've got some interesting private equity transactions in there. CompuSearch was a business that was sold to Abry in 2015. Lindsay Goldberg invested in a business called ECS in 2015. It goes back to a point I made earlier. We've seen a lot of the sort of large financial institutions and private equity funds find this to be an industry that is a great investment opportunity and something that has really kind of been consistent over the years. One of the things that we typically see is that once folks get comfortable in this market, they really start to figure out what the best way to grow equity value is. And we've seen a lot of folks have that type of success in buying businesses, growing them, and then selling them to either other private equity groups or selling them off to larger companies in the industry. And a lot of those private equity groups, when they own these businesses, go through a relatively active acquisition strategy. And, as we talked about earlier, the volume hasn't been great overall, but there's been a tremendous amount of opportunity for folks to roll up some of the smaller companies in this industry. We've seen some bigger deals happen as well. We saw two public companies with significant service presence, and Excellus and Harris merge together. We saw SAIC acquire Cytor, which was a significant intelligence community contractor that SAIC acquired. We're seeing companies like Raytheon continue to think large and out of the box in their acquisition of WebSense, which was a really interesting cyber play for them, really with a commercial bent to it, which is unique for this market. A lot of the other companies in this industry have been moving out of their commercial presence on the cybersecurity side. We saw Leidos sell their Cloud Shield business, and we saw General Dynamics sell the Fidelis business to Marlin Equity. So there's a lot of portfolio shaping that's ongoing with these folks as they think about what they do best and or generate returns off of investments that they made 4 or 5 years ago at the beginning of that wave on things like cyber.
A few years back, we saw a kind of a heavy up in companies buying health IT specialist firms. Are they still doing that, or is most of that settled down in that particular sector?
They're still doing that. There's a real interest in that marketplace, in large part because of the growth opportunities that exist. We see some massive changes occurring in the marketplace. A big contract like the dim sum contract that was awarded to Leidos in the middle of last year, a game changer type of opportunity for electronic health records throughout the government, or on a federal basis. We're seeing businesses really look to continue to acquire and find ways to play in the VA and in CMS. And so that is a very, very attractive market in large part because of the growth opportunities that it represents. And it does, really kind of force people to think about the type of contract vehicles that they need and or areas that they want to play with respect to how they gain access to those customers, and then ultimately what type of capabilities they bring to the table. And, there's an argument in this market that you're just doing IT for health-oriented businesses. And I think that the reality is you have to have a domain expertise as well. You have to be an expert in those systems and the care and the way that the constituent or the patient interacts in order to really, really bring a solution to the table that's going to make sense. So a lot of companies that are smaller today tend to be the attractive companies on the health IT side because they have a domain expertise or they have an employee base that's ultimately going to be a differentiator and help you apply a solution, a technology that's going to make things work better because you understand how that system works, not just because you're bringing the technology to the table. I think one of the more interesting transactions that we'll talk about maybe when we do the 2016 version of this is the acquisition of Truven that was announced by IBM a couple of weeks ago. Very, very significant play for IBM in the health arena, significant analytic and data capacity within that Truven business, and ultimately the type of transaction that we see kind of being a red herring for this health IT marketplace. It certainly is going to be an attractive market for a long, long time.
Well, you've mentioned CMS a couple of times, and you've mentioned smaller players in CMS. One of the intriguing things from my perspective is CMS's use of really a huge quantity of small businesses in all of the activity that I monitor over there. There's just they seem to legitimately far exceed their small business goals when it comes to health IT.
I haven't looked at the stats and don't know what the percentages are, but that's been our anecdotal experience as well, that there are a lot of smaller companies that excel in that market because of their intimacy with the customer, their legacy in that market. And so it does tend to be a place where your history and your knowledge base really matter, where they really differentiate. And we saw a lot of companies in that market acquired in sort of 2010 through 2013. There were a significant number of transactions where CSC and Vangent, before being acquired by General Dynamics, and others were buying businesses in that marketplace. And that slowed down a little bit over the last couple of years, in large part because of the contract vehicles coming towards their end. And so, as we sort of ramp up on this next generation of contract vehicles, I would anticipate that there will be some opportunity for companies to continue to buy those smaller businesses that have that subject matter expertise or those differentiated relationships that really matter in the context of doing an acquisition.
Kevin DeSanto, managing partner of Kips DeSanto. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Kevin DeSanto. Find him at kipsdesanto.com. Kevin, one of the deals that I've been hearing about anecdotally for a while, because I've had a number of employees reach out with some trepidation, was the IBM the Lockheed divestiture of their large IT division. So what do you think about this thing?
A very interesting dynamic and an interesting way to start 2016, for sure. The combination of those two businesses is, we don't know what that's going to yield or how that's going to turn out, obviously, going forward at this point in time. That transaction should close later this year, based on the announcements and public information that we've seen. What it really shows is, I think, again, this idea that you have to be a larger business in order to compete efficiently, and that scale and quantity and bringing together a significant mass of contract vehicles and capabilities is ultimately going to be the way forward. And so it really continues this trend of larger being more differentiated, particularly in the public markets. You know, when you look at $5 to $10 billion companies in the public markets, you know, those are good sized businesses, but they're not the largest businesses. And so, you know, ultimately what we think we'll see is a continuation of larger transactions and larger businesses being more comfortable, and or more competitive, as you look forward. It really is, you know, interesting to kind of think about in the broader context of this. You know, we're not losing a buyer for smaller companies as a result of this transaction. We're just creating a larger business that's independent that ultimately should continue to be an acquirer of businesses going forward. So that's a good thing for a lot of the lower middle market companies or privately owned businesses, you know, to see those companies come together and to think about how they're going to grow that business organically. We also have seen, you know, kind of a spike in transaction activity in the early part of this year that's suggesting that the run rate for the total number of deals that we'll see is going to be higher in 2016 than what we saw in 2015. So when you see a big deal like Lockheed and Leidos coming together, you know, ultimately that does spur some additional energy around the rest of the market. And again, that's good for those lower middle market privately held businesses if they're looking for acquisition, either to be acquired or looking to buy other businesses. And so we think that, you know, some of these big transactions ultimately create a sense of confidence in the marketplace that's good for the overall market and activity. I think it'll be interesting to watch what else can happen in this sector now that that deal and a number of the other deals with the public companies have either finished or are coming to a finish right now. And, you know, if you look across the landscape, I used the musical chairs reference earlier, you would expect that there's not that much large company activity left in the system, that we have worked through a lot of that, which really opens the door to these smaller transactions or opens the door for the middle market businesses to start to think about what their options and what their strategies might be. And it's been interesting because we've seen a lot of the companies in the $100 to $500 million revenue size range continue to be active buyers in order to position themselves either to compete against or to be partners with those large businesses that are now created as a result of the activity that we saw.
So companies like Salient, CRGT doing more gigs?
Yeah, exactly. That's what, and, you know, not them necessarily specifically, but that type
right.
of business we would anticipate to continue to be a buyer in this marketplace, assuming they can find good targets that fit the either capability or customer, you know, strategies that they're trying to affect over the near term here.
Because this is an election year, does that impact the comfort zone of people trying to read where the money is going to be spent in 18 to 24 months?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay.
What we are seeing is that it's not necessarily the top of the issue list or the top of the consideration list for folks. Given that we're in the current 2-year budget deal and that we're in an environment where folks have learned to live with uncertainty and they've learned to live with ups and downs, what we're seeing are businesses that are committed to their strategies and that they have spent the time and effort to understand what all the potential left and right turns are, and that they've really dedicated themselves to developing very specific uses of capital and how they're going to allocate their investment dollars, and that they have ultimately really, I'd say, kind of battened down the hatches and determined where they're going to focus internally. And so for us, we've just seen a much more refined kind of criteria set from the buying community. What we've seen is a much more specific target criteria in terms of what they are actually looking for. And so, you know, the elections are obviously a big factor for all of us, and, you know, not just our daily lives, but in this region, you know, our business lives. And that ultimately is something that we're going to watch carefully, but we haven't seen that rise to the level of importance on an acquisition strategy in the way that it might be viewed or kind of assumed from the outside looking in.
Okay. Now, on the cyber front, I think I've told you this before, but I'll tell you again anyway. I've been monitoring this for over 20 years. In the early 90s, I was on the board of directors of the National Computer Security Association, not because I have any knowledge of cyber, but because I'm a marketing guy and I played in that arena. I was also on the board of something called Pest Patrol later in the 90s, which was a shrink-wrapped anti-hacker intrusion tool that was bought by Computer Associates back then. But you know, is cyber? It didn't get hot for a long time because there was no funding. Is it a real growth opportunity right now?
Yes, and it is a multifaceted growth opportunity, and it is a challenging opportunity, to say the least. The threat environment is changing moment by moment and is ultimately something that is nearly impossible for folks to keep up with. That being said, there is a tremendous amount of investment being made in trying to keep up with that threat. And so we're seeing those opportunities be significant. What I think has changed and what we're starting to see in our research and our conversations with the companies in this industry is that it's starting to merge into the normal day-to-day delivery of a solution, where it's not specifically being targeted as a cyber solution, but it's a holistic effort to become more efficient, more effective, and to be protective of either the data or the end user or the experience that is occurring. And so it's not as much of a standalone opportunity as I think we had anticipated 5, 6, 8 years ago. It's much more of a component of the overall solution delivery. Certainly, there are products and very specialized capabilities that people are buying in a one-off or kind of niche type of basis, but it tends to, at least from our experience, be something that's consolidated in with the rest of the IT or information environment so that people are getting a secure process or a secure solution, and they're leveraging tools in a way that's different than we might have 10 or 20 years ago. You can't use the same tool in 2014 and 2016. You need to adapt and evolve with that threat environment. And so it's created a much more nimble customer need and therefore a much more comprehensive solution from the contractor side. That's been the type of evolution that we've seen and really represents a significant growth opportunity for folks, but maybe less in creating your own tools and more in leveraging the tools that are available and becoming the interface for the government customer or for the end user in a way that allows you to adapt and adjust to the, you know, daily, monthly, yearly changes that market is experiencing. You can see some of that in just those pure play product companies that are out there. You know, there are lots of positive and negative trend lines that you can see there. But the one thing that we know is that threat environment continues to evolve, which means that the growth opportunity is significant for those types of companies.
Bingo. It just occurred to me that you're my first guest in the beginning of my 10th year on Federal News Radio. So thank you.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. And thank you for joining me.
Absolutely.
Once again, my guest has been Kevin DeSanto, Kips DeSanto. You can find him at Kips, K-I-P-P-S, DeSanto.com. You can find Kevin on LinkedIn, where he is quite adept. This is not my day job. If you need help on LinkedIn, if you need help on your overall government marketing program, give me a shout. Look me up at federaldirect.net or look me up on LinkedIn. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.